Good to be with you this morning. If you are visiting with us, we're glad you're here and hope that you will stick around and let us get to know you a little better. This will be a hard one to turn in your Bibles for, so the scriptures for the most part will be on the screen. But we're going to talk about fathers and men in Genesis this morning. And we'll start early on in Genesis and kind of work our way through, even a little ahead of where we are in our series, and then we'll catch up again next week. Now, if you are a man among us, or if you are someone who has had a father or an absent father in life, this kind of like Mother's Day is a weird day for some. And when we had Mother's Day, there's always this grand debate among preachers when we talk about such things about whether we're supposed to acknowledge Mother's Day or not. And what you find out is if you don't, there is an angry horde of women waiting for you at the back, and they want to know why you didn't say anything. And if you do, there are those who say, well, why are we letting Hallmark dictate the preaching schedule? Because it's kind of one of those kind of holidays. And we also know that with Mother's Day, there is a great memory there for some. There is a great lunch to be had with moms who are still here for some. And for others, it's a painful day. And I think Father's Day can be kind of the same thing. Now, we tend to not talk about it as much because men don't have emotions, or at least as we've been told, and we forget about that. But for some of us, Father's Day is not the easiest thing. I last saw my dad when I was 5 years old, and I have two vivid memories of my father, and literally two. There are other little things that come and go at times, but there are two vivid ones. One of them is being a four-year-old in New Jersey, and being on one of those round sleds that you have that for the rest of my life in Alabama and Arkansas, I never saw those in stores again, but I'm sure we have them here. But I was on this round sled that had a rope attached to it, and my dad was spinning me around. I remember the feeling of just being spun around on this sled, looking at my dad, laughing, and my parents were already divorced at that point, but we would have these moments every now and then. This was the vivid one in my head as a four-year-old kid, and I could still close my eyes and see that in my mind. The other one is being a junior in high school, and I think I've shared this in here before, and I apologize if you care about those things, but as a junior in high school, I wrote an essay and was a good writer as a junior in high school. Somewhere along the way, I've lost that completely. But then I wrote an essay, and I won a trip to Valley Forge, Pennsylvania, to learn all about American history. And so a friend of mine, Thad Bartlett and I, and Thad's, I think, a deacon in a church in Atlanta nowadays, Thad and I got on an airplane. It was my second time to be on an airplane. And we flew to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and then drove to Valley Forge. And we went through learning all about American history. The end of the week came around, and we drove back to the Philadelphia airport, and I had told my dad ahead of time that that day we will be in the Philadelphia airport, which is about 40 minutes from his house, and I lived in Alabama at the time, which was not 40 minutes from his house in New Jersey. We'll be there for a couple hours while we're waiting on our plane, and this was in the day and time where people could actually, remember, we could go to gates and all those things. We could all go through security without our tickets. And I said, I will be at gate such and such here. Can you come by? It'd be good to get a chance to see you. And he said, I will be there. And I remember as a junior in high school, sitting in the chair at gate whatever I was at, waiting for my plane and waiting for my dad. And as every bearded man of that age, because all I had was pictures for the last 10, 11 years at that point, would approach, wondering if that, it kind of looks like him from the picture, but I'm not sure. And as every one of them would approach and then walk by to hug someone else there who was getting off a plane or to go wait on their own plane, and for 2 hours, I did that. Watched men go by, wondering if this is the one, and none of them were. And then I got on my plane, and I went home. I will never forget that day. I will never forget what it felt like to be a son waiting for a dad who never showed. I will never forget the phone call that came after that, probably about a week later, with all the excuses of why it didn't come together. And then I remember the next thing I go to in my mind is holding David in my arms in the hospital. And as I held him in my arms, one of the thoughts that went through my mind was that day as a junior in high school. And I thought to myself, how could anybody do that? I hold this boy in my arms, and I have moments with our kids where I'm not who I need to be, but I just think, how does anybody do that? And so when we talk about Father's Day, I get it. I get both sides of it. And when we talk about dads in the Bible, I see guys in there that we connect with really well. I see guys in there that we wish we didn't connect with really well, but maybe we do too much sometimes. And I know it's a difficult day for some, an exciting day for others. But I think there are things we can learn from these men. And it's geared a little toward fathers in a way, but at the same time, as men of God, there is a lot here for us. There's a lot here about who we can be. And not to leave the ladies out entirely, I think there's a lot for all of us as Christians that we can take from this morning. So we'll be looking at these men in Genesis and some things about them. One thing I do want to mention before I forget, on Mother's Day, we gave a flower, a rose, to each lady on the way out. And by the way, each lady, not just moms, we want to honor all our ladies. This morning, we're going to honor our men. And I thought a bunch of men walking into a parking lot with roses would look kind of odd. At least in my book, that's not how I was raised. And so what we have for you this morning that's a little unusual, I racked my brain a little bit, and it's not the perfect gift or anything, but these are pens that have different things about being a man of God on them. There are four or five different varieties. It's a pen on one end, and if you're high-tech, it's a stylus for your iPad on the other end. So you can get fancy. And ladies, if you think you were cheated out of pens, they actually cost what the roses cost. It's almost identical. So we're just trying to be fair to everybody. But men on the way out, and this is not just for dads, I did not order the father ones. I ordered the men of God ones. And on your way out, men, be sure to grab one of the pens. Some of our teenage guys will be in the back to give you one on the way out and force it upon you if you don't take it. So that's what we have coming up. Now in Genesis, men of God. To Seth. And if we'll remember back to as we talked about Adam and Eve early on in this series, Adam and Eve have two sons, Cain and Abel. Cain and Abel do not see eye to eye. Now, honestly, we don't see a whole lot about what Abel thinks because we see Cain's mindset. And Cain is unhappy with Abel because Abel seems to be favored by God in his eyes. And what it realistically is Cain is not doing what God has asked. And Cain ends up killing Abel. And there is just this sadness that comes upon everybody, I think, involved in the situation. So now Abel is gone. Cain is pressed away from the group. And so Adam and Eve have another son, Seth, to kind of reset, to restart. To Seth was also born a son, and he called his name Enosh. And at that time, people began, to call upon the name of the Lord. And I think this is where we begin as men of God, and I think as Christians in general, is we should be people who are calling on the name of the Lord. Now, unfortunately, I think for too many people who profess to be Christians, who profess to follow Christ, who are in buildings like this around the world this morning, this will be the time this week that they are involved in prayer to God. This will be the time this week that they call on the name of the Lord, whether it's in thankfulness or in praise or whatever it might be. And then next week they will come to a building like this again, and someone else will do that again kind of in their name, and they're a part of it. But during the course of the week, folks are not calling on the name of the Lord. Now, we will call on the name of the ducks or the beavers, if you're one of those. We will call on the name of whatever other thing we may be interested in, but we do not spend enough time calling on the name of the Lord. And so Seth begins this whole story with a set of priorities, with a focus of who they're going to be and what they're going to do as a family. And these folks begin to call on the name of the Lord. And then we skip down to Noah. And we're going to skip around some of these men this morning. Noah is in a time where the world is very evil. And the way Genesis 6 starts out is talking about how people have kind of gone off the rails. And they have gone away from what God is doing in their lives. They are no longer calling on the name of the Lord, except for there's this guy, Noah. And the way Noah is described is he found favor in the eyes of the Lord. And I think that would cause us to ask a question. If you were in Bible class this morning, there was a question that was asked in Bible class. We looked at the parable of the Good Samaritan, and the question was asked, what must I do? What as a follower of God must I do? And I think the other half of that question for us this morning is to find favor in his eyes. What is it God wants of us to find favor in his eyes? Because too often what we do is the thing we assume must be good with God. Or maybe the thing we just don't think will upset God. And we don't stop and ask the question, what is it that will find favor in the eyes of God? Going through premarital counseling before we got married long, long ago, we looked at the five love languages as one of the things we did. And if you've not read the book, it's a good book for married couples, dating couples, anybody who just wants to get along with folks. But there are these five love languages, and the basic idea, and I won't remember all five, so I'm not even going to try, but I remember a couple of them. And one of them specifically was gifts, material things. And there are those of us who our love language is, if you love me, you give me something. And usually that comes from the kind of home you grew up in, what was done to show you love there, and then you then carry that on further into life. And the problem is, if your love language is gifts, and your other your partner's love language is, I want to say words of affirmation might have been one of them, if words of affirmation is theirs, then you can buy all the gifts in the world and bestow on them, but never say I love you, and they feel unloved. And you're thinking to yourself, well, I'm showing you love. Look at all the things that I'm getting for you. These things say I love you, and yet because they're not getting the words, they don't feel that. For us, as we look to God, we need to stop being neutral, stop trying to just not be bad, or stop trying to do things in the way we would want to do them, and instead look at God and think, what is it that God has shown me brings favor in his eyes? And Noah was doing that. And because of Noah doing that and showing his family that, things are going to go well for Noah. These are the generations of Noah. Noah was a righteous man. Now, I think God is beginning to open the door here to what does bring favor in his eyes. And the first piece of that is righteousness. Now, unfortunately, in churches too much, we have shortened this word to right, and we just want to be right, and then we run with that. And being right is all fine and good, but that's not what being righteous is. And so it begins with being righteous in the sight of God, which is doing things in the way that God would say to do them. It is leaving sin behind us with the understanding that sin is going to pop up, and we'll get to that later in the sermon. But he begins by being righteous. Then he is blameless in this generation. And I think for us, we can strive for that. Now, we probably will fall short of that from time to time, but we can be people who strive for that. We become known as folks who are blameless, who are not the ones who are instigating trouble, who are not the ones who are doing things that God would not have us to do. This starts to become who we are. I knew when I stood next to the wood chipper with Freddie and with Mel that pretty quickly I was going to look like the lazy one, because Freddie and Mel work like crazy. And I thought, well, this is probably not the best place for me to stand, but I'm going to help anyway. I am in the office here with Roy every day, and I think to myself, that man works. What are we known for? What is the thing people associate with us? And for Noah, he is a righteous man who is also blameless. So if people were to say, well, you're not going to believe what that Noah did, that horrible thing Noah did the other day, other neighbors would say, yeah, you're right, I'm not going to believe that, because that's not who Noah is. Noah is a man who follows God. Noah is different than the rest of us. And then we see that he walked with God, which is the way Enoch is described earlier in the generations that go through. Noah walks with God. And we tend to maybe walk ahead of God sometimes, or maybe a little too far behind God sometimes. We don't always walk with God the way that we should. One thing I learned about my wife during all that love languages stuff, even though gifts are not the most effective thing, which has helped me financially quite a bit, holding hands as we walk is. Now, I've also found out that she's a very fast walker, and so if I hold hands, I can keep up, which is good. But when we are walking with someone, we're there hand in hand. We're having a conversation. We're a part of each other's lives. We're a part of each other's existence. And for God, he desires that we walk with him. Which, by the way, to the people of this day and time where Noah lived, this is an incredible thought, because gods are supposed to be up here and people are supposed to be way down here groveling. People are supposed to be way down here trying to do anything they can to not get zapped by these gods. And instead, this is a God that says, walk with me. And in Noah, you find someone who does just that. Now, these are the generations of Terah. Now, we find ourselves further down as Abram is about to come on the scene that we looked at last week. In chapter 11, these are the generations of Terah. Terah fathered Abraham, Nahor, and Haran. Haran fathered Lot. Haran died in the presence of his father Terah in the land of his kindred in Ur of the Chaldeans. Terah took Abram, his son, and Lot, the son of Haran, his grandson, and Sarai, his daughter-in-law, his son, Abram's wife, and they went forth together. Okay, Lot's father dies, so Terah, Abram's father, takes him in. They are now doing life together. And when we see Abram leave, where he goes to go into the promised land, he takes Lot, his nephew, along with him. And this, to me, is the beautiful part of the story that I started with, which is a sad, frustrating story of sitting in an airport waiting on a dad who would not come. Because when I got back home to Alabama where I lived, I was sad and I was frustrated and I was mad and any other number of things. But I realized very quickly after getting off the plane that there are some really good men in my life in this town. Having grown up without a dad at home, what I found was a lot of replacement dads. And what I needed as a boy growing up was a lot of replacement dads. And so I had a granddad that was close by who taught me how to throw a ball. And he would throw a ball with me until his arm would get tired. And then he would go periodically to his doctor and get a shot in his arm so that a couple weeks later he could throw a ball with me again. I had an uncle who was a brain surgeon that I've talked to you about before who taught me how to drive a standard in his 1971 Corvette, which is great. I had a history teacher, Tony Kendall, who would invite me over to his house almost every week, and we would talk about history and politics and any other number of things. I had a guy, Dave Miller, who was my preacher and taught my Bible class. And he would really make a lot of sense to me in life. And I would watch how him and his wife would interact. And I would learn what it meant to be a husband. And I would learn by watching him and his kids interact what it meant to be a father. I look at Tara and I look at Abram as they take in Lot. And I think, we don't leave people out there on their own. And in our church, I guarantee you there are boys just like me who need that. I guarantee you there are men just like Tony Kendall and Dave Meller and these other guys at my church growing up who are able to provide that. A lot of times, by the way, men who don't have kids of their own even, who just realize there is some way in which they can help out to bring someone along. So Abraham, and we talked a little bit about him last week, but Abraham, he leaves, he takes Lot alongside, and the other thing we see about his relationship with Lot is, when Lot gets himself into trouble, as kids sometimes do, Abraham is there to try to help. Abraham is there to rescue him when he's taken away. Abraham is there to barter for Sodom and Gomorrah when Lot lives there. Abraham is there to rescue him before those cities are destroyed. Abraham is someone who all along the way is trying to be the best father he can be, even to kids who are not his own. Isaac comes along, and we see good about Isaac at the same time we see bad about Isaac, but yet Isaac continues this line of Abraham on to where he's going to go. We see Jacob come along, and Jacob has all these kids, and yet he wrestles with God. And he becomes Israel, which is still something in existence today because it's all part of the plan of God as he brings these men throughout the course of the story here in Genesis. Now, the interesting thing to me, and we'll get closer to our end here, is the flaws. Now, I can't tell you how many times I have gone to bed at night and looked at my wife and said, you know, I kind of messed that up, didn't I? I shouldn't have been so hard on one of them. I should have done something differently. I should have said something differently. I should have addressed a problem that was there, and I didn't feel like addressing it because it was too difficult. I'm really not good at this dad stuff sometimes, am I? Or maybe even more than that, beyond the dad stuff, I'm not good at this man of God stuff sometimes, am I? Not being the husband I need to be, not being the leader I need to be. There are places that I just really mess up, and I feel very incompetent at the whole thing. And then I look at these men that we've talked about today, because we've kind of stayed with the more positive side of things. But if you want to think back through for a second, the reason there is a Seth to call upon the name of the Lord is because Cain and Abel didn't turn out the way it was supposed to turn out, did it? The reason Noah is a man of God, and we think of all these great things that he did, and Noah called on the name of the Lord, and he walked with God, and he's this great example. And yet at the same time, there's a story in the midst of all that with Noah where Noah's son comes in and finds Noah drunk and naked. And then goes tells the other kids, you're not going to believe this, but dad is in there drunk and naked, and they'll have a good laugh together. It's not the part of Noah that makes it into the ark story, is it? And we tend to kind of skip over that one. And if you think of Abram, who is called and has this incredible faith to go to a place where he doesn't even know where it's going to be, and yet along the way, on two different occasions, lies and tells people that his wife is actually his sister because he fears for his life. Now, he knows God has said, you're going to be a great nation is going to come from you. And yet he lies, still knowing that, because he's afraid. And then he gets to be older and older, and the first child is still not come and still not come. And his wife says to him, why don't you take our handmaiden here and you have a child there? And he does, because he's not trusting in the plan of God. And then you have Isaac, who comes along, and Isaac's kids are able to fool him into trading the birthright to the wrong child, because he seems to be kind of an unaware old man at that point. And then you have Isaac's kids who did that to their dad. You have Jacob, who we already mentioned wrestled with God, and then as he has children, he has all these great kids that are going to turn into the tribes of Israel, but at the same time, he has issues with favoritism. There's one he likes better than the others. Now, kids among us, I will tell you, generally you think that and it's not true. But for Jacob, it was true because the Bible tells us so. And Jacob has this flaw, and it develops the favoritism into such a point where one child antagonizes all the other ones. Some of them would like to see him killed. One of them would just like to see him thrown in a pit and maybe come back and rescue him later. It sends everything in a tailspin that is all, by the way, guided by God to get to the point he's trying to get to. And I think that's maybe the point we need to all remember today, is the goods and the bads, the positives and the negatives, the times we get it right and the times the flaws show, God is working through all of that and wants us to be better. Whether we are men, fathers, women, children, whoever we are, God wants us just to be better followers of His. But I'll leave you with a father thought as we close. I hate this one. I shouldn't say that. It's Bible. I don't hate it, but I'm reminded of it from time to time, and I kind of like provoking. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Now, we're easy at provoking, folks. It's not a hard skill to gain. And especially with our kids who we have power over to some degree, and even as we lose that power somewhat as they become adults, we tend to still say things that provoke every now and then. But don't just look at the negative. Don't just look at the side of this that says don't provoke. Look at the side here at the end of the verse. Bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. That is what we are trying to do here as we do life together as a church. It's dads to sons, it's granddads to grandsons, it's mom to daughter and a son, it's dad to daughters. And then for so many of us, it's just the opportunity to help each other along in this way. Because God has laid out so much for us how life is to work. It was interesting, as we were in Bible class this morning, we talked about the question that was asked. And the way that the question seemed to be asked, and was indicated later in the chapter, is that he really wasn't looking for an answer. He was just looking for some confirmation. I hope we're not doing the Christian walk in that way. That we're just looking for confirmation of what we're doing. Because bringing each other up in this discipline and instruction of the Lord, instruction by its very nature means that there are going to be things you learn you did not know. There are going to be things that open up to you in a wider way that you have not considered before. And as we are doing life together as a church, we help each other to see those things. The cool thing about all of this story is that no one who was moving in the direction that God would have them to go was moving in that direction by themselves. Now, there were folks without parents, there were folks without spouses, but they were trying to do life together, moving towards God. And this morning, that's exactly what we're trying to do. And if you look at life and you think, man, my dad didn't leave me in a good place, I totally get where you're coming from. If you look at life and you think, my dad did lead me in a good way, and I just am not following in that direction anymore, then you have the ability to change today. This morning, if you look at your life and you think, I have never been one who calls on the name of the Lord, I've never been one who could be described as walking with God, then we would like to begin that walk. I love the imagery of the New Testament when it comes to baptism that says that we die to the old and then we rise to walk in newness of life. If we are rising to walk in that new life this morning, that is a new life walking with God. Or this morning, if you rose to walk in a new life a long time ago, and that just seems almost like another lifetime at this point, and you're so far off of that track, we would love to help you along the way and for you to help us to walk more in the way that God wants us to walk. Or this morning, if there's just something that your church family can pray about for you, something that you need to share, if you have any needs at all, please come while we stand and sing.